The News from Lake Wobegon podcast is made possible by Yoplait Light, offering the advice that important dates can sneak up on you. Yoplait Light's two-week tune-up could help you lose 5 pounds in 2 weeks. You can start your two-week tune-up at Yoplait.com.
Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown. Out on the edge of the prairie. It's been cold out there, but not so cold, and we got some fresh snow yesterday, so the roads were good and slick and slippery, and there were a lot of people who had sudden introductions to other people they hadn't expected to meet. You know how it is. It's like a dream. Your car is out of control, and you're sliding. There's nothing you can do for it, and there's horror and dread and shame and regret, and then crunch, the big crunch, and you get out of your car, and the other person gets out, and you look at them, and then you meet. Sometimes you meet someone you know, and other times none. It's always interesting, because usually there's one person clearly the sinner and another person is the innocent victim. And there are the skid marks right there, and anybody can see it, but it is still snowing. And people are walking across the skid marks, and nobody is taking photographs. And so it's open to fiction eventually. But in Lake Wobegon, so oftentimes you find two people insisting that each of them is the sinner, competing for self-mortification, a unique form of pride in Lake Wobegon, insisting they were to blame, and how could I have been parked here when I knew that the intersection was so slippery and someone was likely to come skidding into the side of me. This happened to Clint Bunsen on Friday morning. He'd had a rough night. He's had this horrible cold, and then he couldn't sleep because Irene was snoring, and so he went down on the couch in the living room, and he lit a fire in the fireplace, and he went to sleep, and he had a dream in which he was standing around a bonfire with a bunch of men singing Beautiful, Beautiful Brown Eyes, and there was a big bonfire, and then he realized it was his own house that was burning, and they were gathered around and singing around it, and everything was going up, his books and his pictures and his chair and everything he loved was... Then he woke up, and he couldn't get back to sleep. He got up early in the morning, voicemail there from his sister Shirley out in the country. Her house was cold. The furnace wasn't working. He had to drive out there. The fuel truck had come the day before, and they had stirred up something in the tank that blocked her ignition nozzle, and so he had to work to fix that. And meanwhile, she's telling him about her sad life and her kid who's on the hockey team that went up to Duluth, and they got intrigued with the water park at the motel, and they slid down the water slide 150 times, and so they were worn out for the game, and they lost 11 to nothing. The story of her life. We're just losers. We're just losers, she kept saying. He came back into the Chatterbox Cafe, and he had the big breakfast, the number 6 on the menu. He had the pancakes and the egg sunny side up, and the bacon and the hash browns and coffee and orange juice, and he got in his car, and actually in his pickup, his Ford 150 pickup, red pickup, so it's easily seen by people. And he's wearing his red plaid jacket and his barn boots, and he's got the shovel in the back and the sand, and he's pulling in to the Lake Wobegon State Bank, and this blue VW comes barreling out, and she's looking the other way, and crunch right into his grill she goes, and oh. Big whoomp. He gets out of his truck, and there she comes looking at the damage. She's sort of a short-haired blonde woman, sort of bouncy blonde hair in a blue ski jacket. And she says, oh, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry. How could I have done that? And she's starting to cry, and he put his arm around her, and she just sort of melted into him. She said, I'm on my way to a funeral, the funeral of one of my best friends up in Brainerd. She was 43. We just never expected this would happen. She's so bright, and she's a wonderful, wonderful human being. She had everything to live for, and a week ago, she put a car in the garage and she started it and she closed the door and died. I just don't know. She was sobbing in his arms. He had both of his arms around her and her head was against his chest. He could smell her hair, the freshness of her hair, and he could feel her tears against his cheek. She said, "I'm so sorry." She said, I came in here looking for an ATM machine." Well, the Lake Wobegon State Bank doesn't have an ATM. It just goes against their principles, you know. People getting cash, no questions asked. And he said, "You can write me a check. I'll give you cash. I trust you." She wrote him a check for $300. Ellen was her name, from Minneapolis. He always carries a big roll of bills in his pocket, so he peeled off $300 and gave it to her. And he just wanted to hold her for a longer time. She was so beautiful and so tender, and she smelled so fresh. He could see people watching. There were people watching, 10, 12, 13 people watching, but he didn't care. Something about her, it felt right to hold her in his arms. Then he gave her directions how to get to Highway 10, and that gave him two or three more minutes to spend with her. She gave him her business card. "Call me," she said. "Any damages, just call me and I'll pay." And off she went. And 2 minutes later, he heard the sirens, and here came the sheriff's deputy. Somebody had called the deputy, nice guy named Bob, and where did she go? "Well, no problem, don't worry about it. No damage done, no even to file a report." Bob looked at Clint. He said, "You don't look good." Clint said, "I'm fine." "Are you sure you're all right? Huh? Well, I've had chest pains, and I've had shortness of breath," he said. "Well, when you say that to a cop, he's more or less obligated to call the ambulance. So here come another siren." And pretty soon he was on the gurney. He was inside. They had blood pressure cuff on him, and they were listening to his heart as they sped off towards the emergency room in St. Cloud. And they took him in and laid him out on a bed, and the doctor came in. They did the EKG, the blood test, the chest X-ray. They did all of it. And he lay there waiting and thinking about this beautiful woman with short blonde hair in the blue VW, and the smell of her hair and the heat of her tears on his cheek. And he thought about his own death. One would. And he hoped that he wouldn't die anytime soon, because Pastor John is filling in at the Lutheran Church for Pastor Liz. Pastor John, who did the sermon this last week on vulnerability and how we have to be vulnerable and open to pain, otherwise we'll never experience joy. The gospel text was about the baptism of Jesus by John the Baptist, and God speaking out of the heavens, "This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased." How do you get from that to vulnerability? Nobody could figure out, but that's Pastor John. If he gave your funeral sermon, he might just talk about how nice your hair was. He lay there and dozed off, and now he could see candles and he could hear an organ and he could see a coffin and he could see Irene sitting in the front pew, and then there were bells, and it was his cell phone, and it was Irene. She said, "Where are you?" He said, "I just went into St. Cloud to run an errand." "How come your truck is still parked on Main Street?" "Nothing goes unnoticed in this town." "Well, I just left it there. I hitched a ride with some..." "It's a long story. I'll tell you when I get home." He lay there, and he could hear singing from down from down the hall. He could hear people coming towards him. And then they appeared in his doorway, three men. One had a guitar. They walked in. They said, "Would you like us to sing you a hymn?" He said, "I'm okay." Which they took to mean yes. He saw the badge on their chests. It said the St. Cloud Hospice Quartet. A quartet, but there were only three of them. What happened to the other guy? And they stood in his doorway, and they sang, "Oh, love that will not let me go, I rest my weary soul in thee. I give thee back the life I owe, that in thy ocean's drift may flow, and richer fuller be." They came in with the EKG. Everything was fine. The chest x-ray was good. The blood all worked out. He took a cab back home. He got home just in time for supper. Irene said, "I'm glad you got back in time. Your sister was supposed to come for supper, but she called and said she was depressed, so she couldn't come. So I've got all those meatballs and all this macaroni." He sat down. They sat down to eat this silent, silent meal. The two of them in the kitchen. He was waiting for her to ask him about the young woman with the blonde hair. He was trying to think of a good story. Nothing in this town goes unnoticed. I mean, there were 12 or 13 people who saw him with his arms around a strange woman. And he could see what they were thinking. It was in the thought balloons over their heads. They were thinking, Clint Bunsen is having an affair with a young woman, and by accident, they've run into each other. What are the odds of that happening? 12 people, 13 saw it, which means that probably 6 people must have called Irene and told her about it. But she didn't say a thing about it, and then it dawned on him. Angels are invisible. That's why nobody had seen her. She was an angel. She brought him her tears. She blessed him with her tears. And she'd given him this whole beautiful day, including this gorgeous hymn. And now the rest was up to him. The big crisis, like death, that's the easy part. It's just the day-to-day living that wears you out. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average.